Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Yesterday was a nice dramatic day. Right in the middle of the day, all the lights went out. And strangely, within 8 minutes, we had it back up and the program was continued. But they were a part of the program I wanted to look at. One answer to a question. A woman wrote me a note saying, what can you tell by the way a man lives? And she said, does someone's home reflect their mental status? It's a very interesting question, don't you think? Does somebody's home reflect their mental status? So if you walk into somebody's apartment and you see everything thrown everywhere and some little cat somewhere off in a corner mewing, do you think that this means that that person is a restless person? Do you think that means that this person is afraid to set down roots? What does it mean for someone to live in chaos? Do you think it means that at some point they're going to have a relationship with you? And the relationship will be such that there will be no chaos? No. The apartment or the place they live reflects not only the way they are living, if they have choice over it, but what's going to happen with you in relationship. Like, let's say you go out with somebody or you meet somebody who's got a pristine, clean house. The kind of person who follows you around with a paper towel. You know, in case you should put a cup down somewhere. The person who owns coasters, right? And no matter what you do, somehow they're cleaning. They're getting it straight. They're getting it in order. What do you think love is going to be like with this person? How do you think romance is going to be? Do you think there's going to be any of that precision? See, so we have clues. The minute we see somebody's home, we have a clue as to what they're like. I always thought it was quite unusual that people invite people to their homes so quickly because it's so revealing. You put me in someone's home, I know that where they were born. I could tell where their grandmothers came from because I see so much. What if their homes are designer homes? You know, they have a designer home, and it's the kind of thing that they didn't do, but they had somebody else do. And so now you know this person is all about their image. And how they are seen, and that's more important. So in a relationship with this person, you have to be very careful not at any point to bust their image of themselves. They must be seen as perfect and good. Is the home welcoming? Does it welcome you? Even, you know, your office could be welcoming or your home could be welcome, but does it welcome a person who comes in? Does the person come in, do they have room enough to sit down on a couch, or are there dirty old t-shirts everywhere? Does it welcome you? Is it warm? Is it cold? Is it personal? Now, the next thing one should always be cautious about if you're inviting guests over is your medicine cabinet. I don't know of very many people who could get away with not having their medicine cabinet violated. I knew a therapist who used to see patients in her home, and then they would use the common bathroom, her bathroom. But in her bathroom, her medicine cabinet was filled with medications that she took to keep her own brain straight, you know, antidepressants and stuff like that. And they would actually take pills if they wanted to. Your medicine cabinet tells a great deal about you. If you're going to have clients over, if you're going to have people over, if you're going to have people over, you have to be concerned about what you're showing them. Is your home guest friendly? Is it creative? Now, here's another thing about books. Why so many books? Why are they there? Why do people keep books? Almost anymore. You know, Julian, do you know anybody who's still got books of your contemporaries? They have books.
People my age?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some people that have it. I think a lot of it comes down to the image, though. It's like a cool thing to have a bookshelf of interesting books, you know what I mean, rather than actually reading all these books.
One of the things that we've gotten to recently is getting people to donate their books. The best place to donate old books, everybody, to women's detention centers. Hmm. Boy, they could use every bit, especially if you've saved it and you bring it over there, it goes into their libraries. They don't have much modern stuff going in their libraries. It's a fabulous thing. Fabulous thing. Clean out your house. Sometimes a home says, I give up. It says, I give up trying to control anything, especially when there are children around. Now, lastly, do you refuse to inhabit a place that you would call your own? Some men I know live in apartments and they never hang anything on the walls. They don't hang anything on the walls at all. And because they are, it's almost like they don't want to live anywhere but with their mothers. You know, it's like my mommy has my real room. This is just like a hotel I'm staying at. And the last one is, when you're visiting someone's house, do you ever help them clean it? Do you bring a gift every time you go? I was trying to teach a young person I know that some of the rules of what I consider to be real etiquette, which is if you go to someone's home, bring something. Anything, a bottle of water, a single flower, anything that you could bring to someone, the minute you go in, the minute you give them a single anything, it warms their heart. Why do we assume that just because they're coming to you, that they deserve to be there and they show no gratitude? You know, it's really a nice thing. So that's one. And the other is cleaning someone's house. If you use their glasses and you use their cups and saucers and they're all around you and they serve you, do you clean them? It makes you a whole different person in their lives if you do it. Not compulsively. You don't want to clean all their dishes. You don't want to clean out last night's dinner from somebody else. It's just, can you be gracious in their homes? So one of the things that you could learn about is, does a person's home reflect who they are? Yes. Yes. And if you look a little more closely, you'll find a great deal. By the way, a person's car will even tell you more. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be back with you in just a minute. Statistics. Being alone is no easy thing. Yesterday we talked to someone who talked about feeling lonely. By the way, we will be taking your calls today at 212-957-2729. That's 212-957-2729. So Julian went out and did a little research on people who are alone. And let's hear what he came up with.
Yeah, there was some...
This came from MSU, right?
Yeah, MSU, and also the Campaign to End Loneliness website, too.
Okay.
So, over half...
The Campaign to End Loneliness website?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a whole organization dedicated to just trying to help people that are lonely.
Connect. What an interesting idea. Of course, that's what the internet does.
Yeah, I was thinking about the internet as a modern invention of kind of bringing people that are lonely together in a way.
Funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you feel less lonely if you're active on the internet?
Oh, sure. I mean, I used to play a game. I mean, a lot of people used to play this game, actually. It used to be one of the most famous games in the world. It's called World of Warcraft. And it's like, I played it when I was younger, and there were groups of people, and they would be like hundreds of people that would meet every night and go questing together in this game. And I knew several friends of mine who found that these people online were their best friends.
Wow.
Best friends. And they would drop other plans in real life or in person.
Would they ever get together, Julian?
Every now and then, but no, not in the sense in person. It was always online. You talk on Skype and you got 40 people in a group voice chat and they're all talking and doing things and meeting up and joking. And I would see people that go in the game and hang out in the main town area and just sit there and talk to people for hours, not even really playing the game, just sort
amazing.
Of talking
amazing.
With them. Yeah.
You know, here's just a little story. When I was a kid, around 14, 15, I was a chess player and a good chess player at that, competitive. And I was playing 6 postal games at once. Now, a postal game is where you send a postcard to someone with your move on it. They receive it 3 days later. They send you a postcard back with their move on it. So you get one move a week, and you have a board set up for each one of these games you're playing. I mean, it sounds amazing if you think this was done by postcard. And that's how we played back and forth. Yeah, yeah, it was great. One day, after playing these postal games that go about 36 to 50 moves roughly, mm-hmm. which means 36 to 50 weeks, and each one of these people make little comments. I remember Donald Telega. One day, Donald Telega made a move that was an absolutely wrong move. It had to be a mistake. I didn't want to send him a postcard saying this had to be a mistake, so I looked him up in the phone book. There's a thing, a book where they had phone numbers.
What is that?
Phone book, yes. Okay. And I found him, and I called him up, and I said, "This is Armand." Now, he and I have been communicating with each other for a year, and we were both in shock because it was almost a violation that you heard their voice. Is it like this with your friends on the thing?
It is. You know, I have a friend who lives with a friend he met in the game, actually, in another game, and they played for about a year together. And then he ended up meeting in person one way or another. He moved to New York. And they live together now, but it was the weirdest thing. He said it was like I had no this voice had just been this existing sort of in the ether. Oh. It didn't exist in the physical place. And when he met him in person, it was a totally different thing. And it took a while to adjust to that.
Well, I see that happen when people come here to see me.
Yeah, I was going to say radio too, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so a lot of people come in. They only know me as a disembodied voice, you know.
The disembodied voice.
The disembodied voice. So tell me about statistics.
So anyways, so in these statistics here, we found a couple of really, really interesting ones. Over half of all people age 75 and over live alone. And then of those older people...
Now, wait a minute. Let me get that. Half of all
people... Half of all people age 75 and over live alone.
Stop. Let's think about that. I guess that means their partners died. It doesn't mean they're bachelors and bachelorettes. It probably means that if you made it to 75, odds are, number one, you're female, and odds are your partner died. So I would say of that group, of the over 75 group that lives alone, I would say, probably 70% are female.
Yeah, like also a higher percentage of women than men report feeling lonely often. So I guess on the survey, we had mostly women saying this.
Sure. And it would be, of course, that women live longer. Mm-hmm. Now, wait. Also, there must be another factor, too. Why would women feel more lonely than men? Somehow, you know, it kind of reminds me of the primal being. Like, if you're an animal out in the jungle and you're a male, you kind of get away with it just wandering around. You know, occasionally dropping by. But if you're a female, you're not safe in the world unless you have a home, a protector. So I would say there's a primal urge to find the connection, that if you don't have it, some part of your body says you're in danger all the time, and that would get interpreted as loneliness. So loneliness, for many people, could just be fear. You know, fear, I'm not safe. Interesting. So the question of loneliness becomes a translation into safety. If you're lonely, does it mean that you don't feel safe? That's a very important question. We will take your calls on that one. 212-957-2729. Let's get some of the other statistics, Julian.
Well, also another way, we were talking about how the internet can sometimes replace this loneliness, and also 2/5 of all older people, this 65, 75 and older, say that television is their main company. So we can television. Say television, and we can say, that was actually from this year, but we can also say the internet, too, is also a huge social place to go.
It's just beginning to happen. I'm just seeing the silver-haired people doing all kinds of communication on their smartphones. Everywhere you go, they're kind of peeking over each other's shoulder and looking at the smartphones as if they just discovered the internet for the first time. So what was once television is certainly going to turn into an internet, and that it becomes another way for a person to feel safe, which is to be connected on the internet. So I think what was once TV may not be in 10 years, Julian. You know,
I agree.
You don't have any friends who have TVs, right?
We have, you know, television, but it's your monitor for your computer.
It's not like cable.
Nobody has cable.
Nobody has cable. You don't watch programs.
You watch, you know, what you want instantly when you want it, and it ends up being through your computer on the internet somehow.
Let's see another statistic.
We also have between 6 and 13% of people over 65 say they feel always lonely. So this is actually all the time, everywhere they go, they feel lonely.
I'm going to translate that, because we're going to talk about feeling alone quite a bit. All right, I'm going to translate that into not safe further. Mm.
And then also, 17% of these older people are in contact with family, friends, and neighbors less than once a week. And then 11% are in contact less than once a month. So they're also just isolated.
And they isolate themselves, because they're not in contact. Doesn't mean they're not making contact. Very interesting. Hey, we've got Debbie on the line. Hi, Debbie. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Hello, Armand.
Hi there. What don't you believe? The fact that the voice that you've been listening to for so long is finally talking to you?
Yes. That's exactly what I expected to get a busy signal, but I didn't. And I'm very grateful. I don't want to waste your time or listening time. I just felt that...
Wait a minute, Debbie. Is that your approach to life in general? I don't want to waste your time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, maybe. Could possibly be.
How does that show up in romance?
Well, it's been interesting for me. And I just think that it's something that I don't know how to really do romance. I'm not really very good at it, I feel. Maybe that's one of the reasons.
Do you feel not worthy of your partners?
Well, the opposite was actually true. I felt that, I felt that my partners have, especially the last one, gave me everything I wanted, and I was never lonely. I loved it because of that. I always felt really good and connected, but because of other reasons, I've chosen to end the relationship, having to do with, you know, how his car looks and how his life is playing out. And so when I meet new people, I feel like I still feel lonely, is what it is.
So you reject people based on their material possessions or their futures?
Well, I never did. I'm 57 years old, and I had never done it. And so I spent time with two alcoholics, and
So you've had enough of that.
Yeah, I've had enough of it. Now he's sober, but I still feel, well, he lost his job, and he's in the process of going to lose his house. And I just feel like at 57, I just think I can, you know, I'm pretty past that, and I don't really want to deal with it. And as I go out into the world, I feel still this horrible feeling of that I'm judging him, and that, you know, I have no right to do that.
Well, so there's a part of you, Debbie, that would rather be with you than be on a date, than be with somebody who is that broken. You're saying, I'd rather be alone than be with somebody like that. So the need to fill the space is not as big as it used to be.
Right.
So Debbie found Debbie somewhere.
Yes.
Where'd you find her?
In yoga.
That's good place.
I do a lot of yoga, a lot, and it really helped for the last 3 years. It brought me to, you know, to some real positive living and happy living and connections and that sort of thing.
Are you more a warrior type or are you more a child's pose type?
More of a warrior.
Yeah.
More aggressive, and this person who I do love is very like, oh, I'm taking baby steps, you know, and this is where I have a problem.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, you don't need babies.
I don't want babies or baby steps. So
what do you
said
want?
It a little while ago.
You know? Yeah, you're tired of that.
I'm tired of baby steps. And now I'm with this new fellow who I just gone out with about 6 or 7 times. Things seem really nice, but something tells me that I'm going to be alone, that I'm going to be lonely. And then when that hits me, that's why your topic of loneliness, just I know that's at the root of so much of this.
So you mean at some point you sense this relationship is going to go bust?
Yeah, I do that with every relationship, that it's going to go bust.
And you think it's going to go bust because somehow you don't think you could ever succeed at having love in your life.
Yep.
Did you have it when you were a kid? Did you have it with your mother and father?
I think I felt like, I don't think I ever really did. That's been coming up a lot lately, that everything in my family seems like a big show, and I don't ever feel like I'm really ever talking about me or what's really going on, ever. I can't do it. It seems like they don't really want to listen, or nobody can open up.
But you can?
But I can.
Have you had any experience doing this, like in a group, for example?
Yes.
That's what it sounds like.
Yep.
You've been in Al-Anon and group therapy and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Well, you had a practice of presenting yourself. But, you know, Debbie, it's still, I ran into this recently with someone else. If you can't be honest with your own family, it's got to be a part of you that's got the problem, because if you're honest with them, they don't have to be responding properly.
Mm. Right.
You know what I mean? What if they're responding badly? So you tell them the truth. So you say, Mom, you know, I'm a little worried about not being married at this point. And she says, well, I told you, you should have taken that nice Jewish boy that I made you introduce.
Yeah.
And you say, Mom, that's not what I want to hear. Mom, that hurts me when you say that. And you tell the truth. And you tell the truth over and over again, even if it means tears are streaming out of your eyes.
Yep, I'm telling you, Armand, I can't tell the truth. I tell all these little lies, little white lies.
Yeah.
And yesterday I just hit, everything just came out of me. But I was by myself, and I never really got to tell anybody. Never told anyone, really, except for the new guy a little bit. He kind of wanted to tell him some stuff.
And what is the one thing about you that you haven't told people? What is a part about you that's so deeply hidden?
I feel like the big thing that bothers me is that I've stayed with this man that I've, you know, known and loved for 16 years on and off since my marriage broke. And I feel terrible about it. I feel guilty. I feel like I've kept him around, and I've kept going back to him, like, just to talk and be friends. And he's okay with that. I feel like I've, like, used him, or that I've used, that I use people. Because I can't stay in relationships. I always kind of push them away, even girlfriends. I'm not good at it.
So there's a part of you, Debbie, there's a part of you that says, I don't think I'm worthy of love.
Think so.
Because you never really had it with your parents.
Nope. I mean, I know they loved me, but I just didn't feel that love. They didn't communicate it well.
Right.
The way I like it to be communicated, you know?
You didn't feel it.
No.
If you're a child and you can't feel your parents' love, then you're not being loved.
I felt protected.
That's a different thing. And you've had that with men as well, where they've protected you. But that's not what you feel love is.
Right.
Love is another acceptance of Debbie, a different way of seeing you. A way of seeing you not as somebody to lean on, but somebody to share the lean with.
Right. That's what I'm looking for. but I always feel like I can't pull it off, you know? Like, I'm not going to be able to do it. Something's going to happen. I'm going to do something, you know? And push them away.
You know, I know a group of women who meet, who have discussions about that very issue. If you ever get curious about it, give me an email, and I'll direct you to it.
Okay.
You know, because it's the kind of thing that is best not explored just alone. Because sometimes you don't know. You know, like, for example, at an Al-Anon meeting, you go to an Al-Anon meeting, nobody gives you any feedback.
Right.
Because it's against the law to give you feedback. It's against the rules, right? So which it's valuable. It's a very valuable thing for people to be there with you.
Yes.
But it's not valuable. The part that's not valuable is that sometimes you could just say whatever you want and nobody's going to tell you what they think.
Exactly. Exactly, I really agree with that.
And you need in your life somebody who will tell you the truth.
I do. And I was in therapy for a while, but, like, it kind of didn't really work for me anymore. But I do know that I wish I had, like, a spiritual kind of advisory kind of real person who was really about love, you know?
Your therapist didn't know you, obviously.
I don't know. I mean, this therapist, sometimes you would fall asleep when I would talk, I swear. And I didn't like that. It kind of made me feel a little bit weird, like she would close her eyes and she would nod off and stuff. And
well, maybe she wanted to sleep with you.
I don't know. Maybe I put her to sleep with my voice.
No, you see, that's my joke of the day.
Hello?
Yeah, I know. That's pretty difficult. That's pretty difficult. I've had it times when I've been up all night trying to take care of people, and I go in to have sessions, and then I'm sitting with somebody who's just saying the same thing over and over again, and I've had it happen to me. My eyes, I kind of nodded out. And then they'd wake me up, and they'd say, Armand, you were sleeping, and I'd say, no, I was meditating.
Right. That's what I really took it as that. But I really did.
It wasn't true. I was sleeping.
I guess I just want still someone to tell me how to handle the situation, because this has been going on for years and years and years with this man, and I don't understand it. I don't understand it one bit. And that's what I'm trying to make a decision. Like, I feel like I want to break him out of my life completely so that I can move on. But then when I break him out completely and he leaves me alone, I always have to say, how you doing? I text him.
Yeah, I see. See, you don't want to let go.
Nope.
I understand. You know, send me that email. Let's take a deeper look at it than we can right now.
I will. I'm on.
Okay. Thanks for speaking.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Oh, okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Ha. 63% of adults aged 52 or over who have been widowed, and 51% have been widowed, and 51% of the same group, I'm reading this, who are separated in divorce report feeling lonely sometime often, more often than not. You have somebody else on the line and I have 1 minute. And it seems that of all things, we're going to have to dig into this further because, you know, you can get lonely when you're in a crowd, or you can get lonely when you're laying in bed with someone watching television. You can feel alone if there's no friends or family to be there for you. Let's take a look at that when we come back from our break. We're going to have to take a break now. And Yusuf, I know you're holding on the line. Let me say hello to Yusuf. We have just about a minute left. Hi, Yusuf. It's Armand DeMille.
Hey, Armand. How you doing?
Good. Nice to hear your voice. I've got just about 45 seconds.
Okay. The reason I'm calling is if you can define what loneliness is to me, because I look at my life and I can't find what loneliness is.
Good. I will definitely do that over the next half hour, I promise.
Okay,
Yusuf, nice to hear from you, and thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Sure. We're going to have to go. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. Take a short break, and we'll be back after some beautiful music. Beautiful music.
Find love, you and I, it's a new game to play. Then we tell our first lie and see love go away. And we find we're alone. We rush on, you and I. We don't need love at all. We need thrills, we need speed. Then we stumble and fall. And we find we're alone. We're loyal, you and I, to flowers that are dead. We forget how to cry. We save photos instead. And we find we're alone. We hear guns, you and I. We ask, what is that? Then we open the Times. We're informed where it's at. And we find we're alone. We're moral, you and I. We stand for what's right. We slaughter all evil by dawn's early light. And we find we're alone. We're lucky, you and I. We're alive and secure, but in a bank and the church we can never feel sure. And we find we're alone. We've made it, you and I. We have glory and fame, yet we never know why. We feel so ashamed. And we find we're alone. We have power, you and I. But what good is that now? We would build a new world if we only knew how. And we find we're alone. We are old, you and I. We beg warmth from the sun. In the dreams that we dream, we ask, what have we done? And we find we're alone.
That's from Jacques Brel, Is Alive and Well and Living in Paris. An off-Broadway play that appears every now and then somewhere on West 72nd Street. He comes back. The original album of that is filled with Ellie Stone and I forget who it was. It's just filled with incredible music made from poetry by Jacques Brel, who was a man from, I think, the Netherlands, who resisted the Nazi regime in his own way. Beautiful. Jacques Brel is alive and well and living in Paris. First time I saw that program, I remember sitting in under the stage in some Greenwich Village place, a presentation place, auditorium. And it was the Village Gate, it was. Those of you who remember the Village Gate. And it was incredible performance, right up into your face. I'll play more of that as we get along. So we're talking about alone, and we're talking about loneliness. Now let me take you one more step on this feeling of loneliness and aloneness. And I'm going to do this through music. Because what I want you to hear is that even when you are with somebody, you can feel the destitution, and you can feel totally alone, even if you're with somebody who is completely connected to you. So the alone feeling very often comes from a feeling of depression. Now, during the war, people would be ravaged and they would lose things and it would be terrible things. And here is a song about one person singing back to her depressed mate about not being alone. Let me have you hear this. It's just gorgeous. And And that's Ellie Stone singing.
No, love, you're not alone. It's all right if you cry. If things don't turn out right, all we can do is try. We'll see a show tonight. There's something we can buy. No, love, you're not alone. Don't let it get you down. It's just another day, and everything's turned brown. You've walked your bloody mile. I'll hold you for a while. No, love, you're not alone. I swear the sun will rise. I promise you you'll laugh. He'll love dry your eyes. Come on. Come. We've got each other now. That's got to be enough. Pretend.
Jacques Brel is alive and well. So sometimes you wonder if depressed people feel lonely. Well, part of the advantage of depression is you don't feel lonely, because depression depresses even your need to have people there. So there are two things to distinguish. Are you feeling alone or are you lonely? Yep. Those are two different things. Imagine that you're somebody who is a caretaker, the kind of person who's stable and solid and everyone tends to turn towards. At one point of your life, usually around a time when people feel needier than others, at any given time, you seem to be putting out with everybody. Everywhere you go, someone needs you or wants you. You ever have that happen where you are just so totally needed? And these are people who love you and you care about, but everyone seems to be taking and no one has anything to give. It happens. At this time, you're the sole solid force in life. Everybody else is falling apart and nobody has anything to give to you. So you feel very alone, alone in your strength, which is cracking. You turn to folks and say, "Would you take care of this for me?" And they would try, but they can't do it well enough, so you do it yourself. So you turn towards no one, and your only safe place is a time you spend alone, but the phone does ring, and messages on your machine, and in your cell phone, and your text messages, they do need responses. So even being alone is not a refuge. Now here's a case for someone who feels very alone in his or her life, nobody of equal strength around. But are they lonely? Absolutely not. If lonely means wanting someone else to be there, and if everybody there wants something from you, then the only loneliness you feel is the desire to be with yourself and nobody else. So that brings up a very interesting question. You know how many people think of the different ways that they could find loneliness to not be a part? Yep, the question is, what is loneliness? Hey, you know, before we go further, let's take a call from Joseph, who's been waiting on the line. Joseph, hi, this is Armand DeMille, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Armand.
Thank you for waiting, I'm sorry.
That's not a problem at all, I enjoy waiting, no problem. Quick question. In your opinion, why is it difficult for people to say, "I love you"?
So you have someone in your life who you feel really connected to, but she holds herself back at a distance. Is this right?
That is correct, Armando.
I know.
My fiance.
I know.
I've known her for over 20 years, but we recently got together the last 4 years, and we decided to get engaged.
And you tried to get engaged, but you didn't?
Yeah, we are engaged. Yes.
You are engaged, right? But there's a piece of her that refuses to give you
absolutely
the I love you.
Now, Armand, I can say I love you, and she'll say I love you back, but it's not... You know, it's not solicited. You know,
yeah, I understand.
Like, you know what I mean? It's just, and I'm
Joseph,
not understanding that.
Joseph, does she ever use your name?
Yeah, she uses Joe, but mostly she'll say babe. You know,
right? But very not often does she say Joe, right?
Not often, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a part of her that's holding herself back. Now, did you ever ask her about this? How is it, honey, that you never give me a unsolicited I love you?
Yeah, but see, the other problem is, Armand, is when it's time to talk, I'm a communicator. Let's sit down and talk. This is the type of person I am. But for some reason, she's not like that. And when it's, you know, when I bring this up, like, let's sit down and talk about some things, you know, she becomes very defensive.
Sure.
You know, and it's like, it's time to get up. She'll get up and just walk away, you know. She'll think I'm picking, or she doesn't want to. You know,
so there's some energy, okay, which is telling me a lot, Joe, because what you're saying is you present a certain energy to her where she doesn't feel safe. Now, whether it's something you're doing without knowing it, by the time you want to discuss something with her, it means you're distressed.
Okay.
Now, if she knows you're distressed and she doesn't want to deal with it, she's going to get away from it. So let me see. You have to have some sit-downs that are not about distress.
Right.
Do you ever have anything that you want to discuss that's just wonderful?
Oh, yeah. We talk all the time about other things. It's not a problem talking and you know, about whatever. But when it comes time to, you know, talk about the relationship, that's just something we don't do.
Yeah.
So, and that's because of her reaction, you know.
Sure. So did you ever talk to her about that? Did you ever say, honey, this reaction you have whenever I try to discuss anything with you kind of limits me in where I can kind of get any depth with you? You're not blaming her. You're just trying to tell her, you know, that it's, I would like to be able to get beyond it. How do you suggest, my darling
right.
dear, how do you suggest that I approach you in such a way? Would it be better if every time I approached you, I brought you a martini? Would it be better if every time I spoke to you, I brought a flower?
Right, right. You know, and not just the I love you. Like I said, she'll say it back, I love you too.
Yes, I know that one. I know what you're talking
about. And in addition to that, you know, I mean, I'm a hugger, I keep telling her I don't need this stuff all the time. It's just I need affirmation sometimes. I need a, you know, hey babe, how's you doing? You know, how are you? Give me a hug and whatever, a little kiss on the cheek, but it's just nothing.
Well, it sounds like you've never really felt safe in life. You didn't feel safe as a kid. No, you didn't feel safe in life. You didn't feel really safe, and the way you got your safety was by getting people to embrace you. You want people to just love you back because you're dying to feel something, because without it, you don't feel right.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So she senses your need and somehow chooses not to service that need. Maybe she wants to say I love you, not to make you feel better, but just when it comes directly from her heart. I wonder if that would possible. But again, you have to find a way to sit down with her and talk about this. Or even not sit down, lay down, or go rowing, or go sit in the park somewhere. Do it some other way.
You know, it's just one of the, and I'm even at a point where it's like, you know, can I continue? I mean, is it that serious for me to continue on a relationship or not? You know what I mean?
Sure, but try not to mention that.
I'm trying to wrestle whether it's a deal breaker or not.
Yeah,
because
no.
I really need to hear that sometimes. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, she does things, you know, but she does those. She's a very kind person. She's a very giving person. So the things that she does for me, she does for everybody else.
So I hear,
you know what I'm saying?
I hear your anger. Yes, yes, absolutely.
So
did you ever tell her that you're angry?
I'm sorry?
Did you ever say to her, I'm angry with you?
No.
Why not? Because you obviously are.
Okay.
I mean...
No, I've never said that. And I don't feel angry.
But you are, the way you're talking right now, you're expressing a lot of anger towards her. She shows you affection only when it's reciprocal, right?
Right.
She shows, gives things to other people that she gives to you, and is no real difference. You're
right.
A man who wants to be special, and you're angry at her because she doesn't make you special. Now, just think what would happen, Joseph, if you told her this. My God, if she's going to run away, well, the hell with it anyway. Tell her the truth.
Yeah.
And the truth is, Joseph is angry. And don't threaten yourself with leaving. Don't say, maybe we should end the relationship. Just instead say, I want you to know something. I'm angry with you because I don't believe I receive enough affection from you that makes me feel special. And I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stand right here and deal with it.
Right.
And I would prefer you don't go running out of the room, because I may just have to follow you.
Okay, I see. All right.
Now, well, look at what I'm doing here. I'm getting beyond your own denied feelings. See, you have feelings about being angry that you don't like to face. She has feelings about being angry that she doesn't like to face. I'm saying put it on the table.
Right.
Give me a call back and let me know how that goes, Joseph.
I sure will. And Armand, I really appreciate you taking my call. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
212-957-2729. So, I want to explore the depth of this with you. What is loneliness? It's a feeling of isolation, desperation, sadness, fear. Will the loneliness go away if somebody else is there? Sure it will, for the time being. But when they're gone, it probably will come right back. Let's be the group of friends who got together to share common experiences about this. Here's my first question, and I invite you to call in and collaborate with me on this. We have a big question. After all is said and done, each of us, married, couple, parents or no parents, each of us is alone. Big deal. Of course we're alone. I'm me and you're you. I'm not you. You're not me. If I go into a restaurant and nobody is with me and the maitre d' says, are you alone? I say, yes. If I go to a movie by myself and the ticket person says, how many tickets? I say, one. What's wrong with being alone? How many of you have been out there at the restaurants and get this embarrassment? Just one, you say, or only one. Only one is if you have to make an excuse for yourself. You know how many people live alone in different parts of the world? Do you think every widow or widower is in torment about their loneliness? Alone is not the feeling that causes despair. Alone is real, whether or not you're with others or not. But that other feeling, that other anguish, that despair comes with the other feeling, not alone, but lonely. Lonely. That's the feeling we have to deal with, lonely. Why is it that some people who are alone don't feel lonely and some do? And then some people who are not alone do feel lonely and some don't. I'm not sure I have the answer, but I certainly can help define the question. Maybe it's just about finding the perfect mate. Maybe it's not. Maybe you have an answer to this. 212-957-2729. You see, there's an additional problem here. We are each and every one of us alone in one way or another. But then again, we're not. This really gets confusing. Our skin-encapsulated ego, this is the self, the supposed self that distinguishes people from each other. I am me, and you are you, and everything inside my bag of skin is me, and everything inside your bag of skin is you, and there's a very thin line here. What happens to that thing? And then, what about the oil from your hand? Did you become me? Did I become you when I exchange anything with you? If I exchange food with you? The line is very thin. Line is very thin as to what separates us. So therefore, nobody is really anybody. Therefore, how can anybody be alone, really? And then there's the other dimension of spiritual belief, where you feel connected to God, whatever that is to you. Is it true that every person who believes in God therefore does not experience loneliness? If you believe in God, you can't experience loneliness. You can't. I mean, you got You got the big one right in your hip pocket. Is, as some would like you to believe, all loneliness the result of the absence of a spiritual connection? I don't think so. No, I think it goes a lot deeper than that, and I think we're going to have to do further exploration into this. I met quite a few people who have no sense of religion or spirituality or God, and who do not suffer from loneliness. And I've met many believers who do suffer from loneliness. So what do we absolutely know about loneliness that's not refutable? How about this? Loneliness is a bad feeling. Can we say that? Well, that's pretty good as a generality. I've never met anyone who said that they felt lonely that felt good. So, but is lonely a feeling? That's a very big question. Lonely is a thought. We know that when we are lonely, you are thinking. Your mind is active, wishing you could be free, connected to someone else other than yourself. But there's a very big phrase, other than yourself. Loneliness means wherever you are now, you're not feeling good, and you want to be with someone else. If you're alone and lonely, you're saying that right now you hate feeling whatever you're feeling, and you want to escape. So loneliness really means maybe unhappy with yourself. Well, if that's the cause, then it's not somebody else who's going to solve your problem. If you don't like yourself enough to be able to embrace yourself in some way, then loneliness is not about the other person. So remember, loneliness is not about needing someone else. Loneliness is about needing yourself. Let's take another call here. We have Doug on the line. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing, Armin?
Good. Good.
I was feeling very lonely when I was younger, and it was just a horrible, lonely feeling. I guess when I was living in community and places like that, I felt safe. People were around me all the time. But then when I left, I felt very unsure of myself. One day I just came to the end of myself. I was doing all kinds of good things, but I didn't feel peace, so I went to my basement where nobody would go, and I decided that I was going to wait until God spoke to me. I wasn't going to pray or anything, and I figured I'd be there a couple of weeks, you know, like the people in the Bible who fast for weeks or whatever, but it ended up being about 5 minutes. I felt like this burden lifted up, and I went out because God spoke to me, said, "You're supposed to get some bread for that old lady." So I went out to get it, and I met somebody who was just walking, and he didn't know where he was going. He took a plane from Africa to the U.S., and he had a backpack, and I was making up excuses in my mind not to pick him up. And something just said to me, you know, the flesh is pitted against the spirit. So I stopped, and I said, "Do you need a ride somewhere?" And he said, "Said, are you a Christian?" And I said, "Well, thinking in the United States, that didn't mean much." So I just said, "But maybe where he came from, it did." So I said, "Yes." So he got in the car, and I took him somewhere. And he turned out to be this just really amazingly gifted person. And we hung out for a few months.
Doug, we're on our last minute.
Okay, so I never felt lonely again after that.
Okay, so let me use that as a good point. The part of it that I absolutely believe in is that you at one point went down to the basement and you said, "I'm going to wait until God speaks to me." And I also believe another translation of that is, "I'm going to wait until my yearning is over, and I'm going to wait until I find myself." So maybe it was God you found. I know in you heard a voice. Maybe it was. Or maybe it was your old voice you heard. But either way, it took you out of that. And the generosity that followed, the connection that followed, was just beautiful. It was an amazing thing.
Yeah.
So however it's framed, it's a lovely thing. And I think that more people would be able to find that very thing with themselves if they took the time to find out that the person they're lonely for is right there all the time. All the time. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be having to go right now. It is 5 to 2. On Tuesday of next week, we're going to be doing a program about rejection. I'll be following up with that. Thank you very much for being here today. We'll be back with you on Tuesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the start of the show? From the racks and the stacks, it's the best on wax. Let me hear you say yes.
Go ahead, say something.
Well, all right.
Songwriter, producer, arranger, superstar.